Hi, and welcome to Being Lutheran, a podcast dedicated to proclaiming the excellencies of Jesus Christ and the biblical theology expressed in the Lutheran confessions. Today, Pastor Jason Goodham, Pastor Brett Bowe, and Pastor Adam Osier have a very special episode. This was recorded live at their Being Lutheran conference, and it is a Q&A session with author and speaker Gretchen Ronovic. Being Lutheran is sponsored by the Free Lutheran Bible College and Seminary in Plymouth, Minnesota. Whatever your vocation is, start here, go anywhere, grounded in God's Word.
Welcome to the Being Lutheran podcast. We are at the 2024 Being Lutheran Conference, and this is a special episode where we have Gretchen Ronovic just presented, and we'll have a Q&A time together with her at this time. And I am Pastor Brett Bowe, and I'm joined by
Pastor Jason Goodham
and Pastor Adam Osier.
And
Gretchen Ronovic.
All right.
This is weird.
We have a live audience here today, so yes.
Yeah, you can say something.
There you go. All right, yeah, great. Well, I'll just start our conversation here, and we have other questions for you, Gretchen, but I just loved what you just presented, and you kind of started off by talking about how it's a small world of Lutheran writers, and
yeah.
So just maybe give us a little behind the scenes of what you found in terms of Lutheran authors out there.
Yeah, I think... part of the challenge might be just that there's so many small Lutheran denominations. And I don't know if you know this, but we're all very opinionated.
No, we're not.
That's your opinion.
Yeah. So getting them to work together enough to publish things, which can be an inexpensive endeavor, can be a challenge. I've noticed that there's the last maybe year or two, especially a huge trend of a lot of publishers looking more for Lutheran authors than I saw even some years ago. But yeah, so I have been working with 1517 for my first book, and then my second book coming out is actually with Crossway Publishers, and they found me because they were looking for a Lutheran woman author, and I think I was the one that they came up with. And so that was for a children's biography on Katie Luther, Martin Luther's wife. And then my third book is with Lex and Press. And so they are also on the hunt for some Lutheran dimension to their publishing houses. So a lot of them are trying to include that more, which is a good thing, I think.
What makes you think? Not what makes you think, but why do you think they are on the lookout for more Lutheran authors?
I think, and this is vastly my opinion, more than any data behind this. I've been talking with a lot of young adults, and I think for a while, especially in American Christianity, the non-denomination / Baptist movement reigned, where they would say things like no creed but the Bible, and no, you know, basically we just read the Bible and we don't read anything else. And what ended up happening was a culture where the doctrine was surrounded around whatever the pastor said it was. And then you see a rise in the celebrity pastor culture, which then you see the fall of the celebrity, you know, pastor culture. And there's, I think the younger generation is very highly under delusion of the whole megachurch celebrity pastors, and they're looking for something more concrete than just the pastor in front of them and saying, is there some church that actually has some things that have been the same for a longer period of time than just the last, what this pastor is saying now? So I think it's being driven by the younger generation. Even one of my college daughters, she goes to a very liturgical church out in Chicago, and it's just full of young families because a lot of them are just kind of like, I need something bigger than just this one person in front of me. So that's my own opinion on that.
I kind of wonder if it's not to our advantage that Lutherans are late to the content creation game, because you, at the beginning of the internet, you had this wave of Christian creators, mm-hmm. but Lutherans were just kind of all holed up behind our walls and things. And then, like, in the last probably 10 years, we finally hit that meme. There are literally dozens of us.
Yes.
Dozens of us. And I think people are starting to find out that, you know, we have things to say, and it's valuable.
Yeah.
I just thinking of that too. There were a couple of statements that just felt so piercing from those generic Christian publishers that mm-hmm. said to you something like, "The gospel doesn't sell." Mm. And I think another thing you said was, or they said to you, was something on the lines of, "Well, isn't that kind of the long way to say the same thing?" And so, what's your perspective of? I'm sure those things hurt, and just if you could just reflect on that a little more.
I think sometimes I get frustrated because I know in a lot of our churches we are using these resources because they're flashy, and I've seen the effects of them on the women that I mentor, and trying to, I think it makes me want to produce better resources that are more firmly ground in the gospel, whether or not they sell, just because they're so life-giving. But I think there's an element too, and this is just from a publishing perspective, the top five Christian publishers in the United States are owned by secular people, where what sells actually does matter. And so so a lot of the smaller publishing houses are more denominationally owned. And when you're in a small denomination like me, that's really tough. But then if you get into the larger publishing houses, they're not really as concerned with your doctrine as much as, can your book sell? And that's a tricky place to be in when you're trying to get that word out. So,
how much, kind of changing gears from the business side of things to the personal side of things for writing, how much of your writing as an author comes from that kind of innate curiosity? So, like, you know, you talked about the burden mm-hmm. of being the one Lutheran in class, and you know, but what about this? But what about this? Is that more or less what you're building your writing off of? Is just kind of digging more into something you're interested in?
Yeah, I would say absolutely. The current writing I'm working on is on patience and the patience of God, and I was curious about that because I'm not patient. And so it's just kind of like, how do I learn this, and do I want to learn this, and is this going to hurt to learn this? And realizing that that's probably a universal Christian struggle of just what does patience look like for us? And so a lot of, and then it's taken a really long time to write the book because my curiosity has led me down a lot of theological rabbit holes that were just fun. And so it's hard to stay focused on what I need to be doing.
So, do you feel the freedom to do that, to explore those rabbit holes, or I guess I'm transitioning a little mm-hmm. bit into the business side of the question, but do you feel the pressure of having to do that, or do you feel the freedom of being able to, I get to really dig into this, this is refreshing to my soul too?
It probably depends on how much time I have for writing in that season in my family. I think I feel that when my family's in a really busy season, it's easy to feel guilty when I'm at work. Like, is this really worth it? Like, is this gonna maximize my time? But when we're in a really good season and making space for that, then I think I feel better with that. That's probably the most honest answer, whether or not it's right. It's what it is.
In reading Ragged, you know, the descriptions you have of the various, and I'm full disclosure, I'm actually using your book for spiritual disciplines class that I'm teaching this
Yay.
Fall. I wish you'd just come teach
Yay.
It. And then I could do other things. But, you know, you'd be better at it. But what I noticed in the description of each of the various disciplines, which I really appreciated, by the way, the reason I'm using your book is there isn't a list. And you shared that in your the things to do. I hated spiritual disciplines. As you know, growing up, have I done devotions enough? Mm-hmm. And we start to add all these adjectives and adverbs, yeah. which I've grown to hate mm-hmm. because it's mm-hmm. never enough. I've never fully surrendered. I've never truly in the Word as much as I should be. And your book is so refreshing in that. And you spell that out in each of those different chapters. Was your learning and curiosity, you know, did you have one discipline that you studied and wrote about that really was eye-opening to you in the moment as you were writing that book?
Probably most of them. Some of them I practiced just so I could understand them better. Fasting maybe, or I suppose I had done that before, but I was just trying to go through it again so I could write through it. I remember the chapter on prayer was probably the last one that I wrote because it was so hard because I still felt like I hadn't mastered prayer enough to be able to write about it. So I kept kicking it down the line. One theme that arose that was eye-opening to me was that there was an individual element to each discipline, but there was also a communal element. That was not something I learned until I was in the writing process. Just how important community is for the disciplines. And I think that's, again, a very American Christian thing that we have where we want our faith individually. And to see our faith growing as something that is done as a group was a huge eye-opener for me.
Mm-hmm. The line from your presentation that hit me the most, I'm still trying to wrap my brain around it because I thought it was so utterly profound, is we cannot rely on our ancestors to do our vocations for us. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but I felt like we as Lutherans are particularly guilty of that.
Yeah, probably.
like we're just going to serve up the 1500s on a platter and say, here we are, you know, here's a 700-page book, just run with it.
Yeah.
I mean, just unpack that a little more because, and I loved that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think as Lutherans, the easiest way to teach theology is through church history. You know, why we believe what we believe. And really, you can even go back further than the 1500s. Any of the doctrines that we believe come from a moment in history where the church was wrestling with issues. And you can think of doctrines that churches are wrestling with right now, because our culture is wrestling with them, and so then we're having to put out various statements of, I mean, that's what's always been happening, to know the context of that. But I think sometimes we get to defining what we believe so carefully that we forget that these definitions are for someone. They're not to defend ourselves or to prove to everybody that we're right. It is so that the word of God will go forth to a particular person. And I think what is sometimes missing in these teaching on theology is loving our neighbors well through it, them particularly, of what are they struggling with that day? What is the biggest thing that is weighing on their mind, and to know them and serve them and love them well, is a huge part of theology that is easy to miss when you're kind of something to miss, like the forest through the trees type of thing. It's for people.
Yeah, very good. I wanted to ask you about women's ministry, and I'm just wondering of what's a way forward where insisting on a gospel-focused ministry to women without talking about it in such a way where we're, like, demanding it, like in a law kind of way? I don't know if that makes sense.
So, let's see. I don't know if you could be more specific, and I'm trying to think of how to answer
yeah.
that.
I'm just thinking, you know, as a reaction to the law-based mm-hmm. women's ministry or men's ministry,
yeah.
like
yeah.
you mentioned, of trying to insist on that without making it sound like the gospel-centered is a new law.
It's just a new law.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest struggles that I've had in getting women or older women to mentor younger women in various churches is the fact that so a lot of this came about, again, with my history of publishing and understanding Christian publishing. There was a season of what was known as, what is now known as kind of the pink Bible season, where they, you know, they would come out with the women's study Bibles and with the women's devotions and the theology got really pink. And what happened through that when it was really law focused was, this was kind of women who came of age in like the 70s and 80s. They got the really law heavy message. And so what I have found is that as those women are now the older women in the church, those are the ones who are terrified to mentor the younger women because they were so crushed by that. Hmm. And so getting them to, I've learned that when I go speak places and share the gospel as clearly as I can with women's ministries, it's normally the baby boomer women who have the tears running down their faces, hmm. who need to be broken down. And when they understand that discipling the next generation is about sharing the gospel for them, you don't have to tell them what to do. You don't have to make decisions on what they should be doing with their children. You don't have to be making family decisions for them. Your job is to show how Christ is for them in their marriage and how Christ is for them in their parenting, or Christ is for them in their job, or understanding the for you-ness. That's a phrase that I've heard thrown around, but how Christ is for you and having that discussion with women of what does that mean in this situation and what does that mean in this situation. And that ends up being a lesson in Christian freedom. And it's a lot of hard, difficult conversations, that are usually best done face-to-face, person-to-person. But it's, I think all of us lend towards law of, if you would just do X, Y, and Z, your family will just turn out wonderful, which ends up being kind of a prosperity gospel mm-hmm. of some sorts. And so making it about Christ for you ends up being a completely different conversation.
Should we open it up at this time? We got Gideon is in the back with a microphone. If you have a question for Gretchen specifically or just on the topic, raise your hand and Gideon will find you. Oh. I see that hand. Oh, there we go. That's one up. Over here, Gideon.
Did you just say, I see that
I
hand?
I did, there? Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And just greasing the wheels yeah. of
For
progress.
For those not present, I want the record to reflect there were no hands.
Yes. That's why we're on the radio.
Right. Hi. You mentioned about how you had taken a day to write. Mm-hmm. And then you've also mentioned how you have seen of the things you've written and the things you've spoken affecting people. And as moms, we affect our children and how we are ministering to them or training them. Can you share anything about how, while you were doing these things, what you noticed with the changes happening in your own family, or how these changes brought how you handled things differently?
Yeah. I've got two of my sons here today, so you guys can wave and I'll embarrass you over there.
That was reluctant at best.
I think studying having my writing days and trying to teach my kids what they how to walk in their faith is not always pretty. I'm not always the best teacher with them. Because immediately I'll go straight to, well, if you would just do this, you know, then it would just be fine. I think what has impacted me the most in my writing is my kids telling me or showing me that I need to allow them to have their own spiritual walk and their own spiritual struggles, and where they're at is where they're at, and to have patience with that. I think it's really easy to want your kids to be the one to kind of be the Holy Spirit in your child's life, and just be the one, like, if I'm just going to say the thing, and then you're going to have to just do it, and then that's just going to have to be how it is. I have joked sometimes. I think of my two oldest kids, and especially, are just amazing, hard workers, and really hard on themselves hard workers. And I've talked about grace so much that they rebel by working a lot. those are my two adult ones. I don't know if that helps at all, other than it's been fun to have conversations with them through all of it. They all have strong opinions on faith. We had so many theological conversations at my table when I was growing up. Our table, we talked about all things theology. That was normal, and it wasn't always pretty, and sometimes it was really loud. And I think both my husband and I read enough and love talking about it enough that, you know, even when one of our kids is going through confirmation, as I mentioned before, Luther's Small Catechism is just a huge resource I keep coming back to again and again. And when they're going through confirmation, we try to use that as an opportunity to bring that into the dinner table and talk about it. And they learn, okay, I can be really dogmatic and annoying about this with my friends, and maybe I should pull it back again. And I'm like watching myself grow up with them over and over again. So it's, I've told a lot of people this phase of parenting that I'm in is probably one of my favorites, because it involves me praying a lot and watching God do the work as they're getting older and older, to see God work in each of them. It's convinced me more than ever that the gospel is true, and it is truly Christ alone, because I think about all the ways that I have messed up, and Christ was faithful to them. And I won't talk any more about that, because I'll start crying. So that'll be.
I think I saw another. Was there another hand over on this side? Yeah, a couple over there. Gideon.
Gideon's going to take the long way around. You can walk through the front, Gideon, because we're not on TV. So,
Gideon, longtime listener. That's my yeah. Son.
First time caller,
longtime listener.
All right, so I'm going to ask you for a list of things to do. what advice do you have for someone who is interested or maybe may have a calling towards being an author?
I would probably start by forming together some article ideas and start pitching them.
Okay.
I think when you are writing, like, again, I fight this tendency every single time I write where I want to sound really smart. And so fighting that and instead thinking about who this is for. Most publishers are looking for that. They want to know, are they talking down to the reader or are they loving the reader? And a lot of publishers say that's the difference between who gets published and who doesn't. Is, are you loving your reader or are you talking down to them? Because everyone can rant about whatever pet project they have. But loving your reader well.
So I just wanted to piggyback kind of off of that, off what you just said. Mm-hmm. Something I really appreciated from your talk and from your answer right there was how when we do theology, this is something our dogmaticians talk about, it's not simply something speculative and theoretical, it's practical. And so you write it for people, and that's what it's aiming to do. So what I'm curious about, I understand if you don't, you know, have numbers for this and stuff, but how have you seen your work received by non-Lutherans, like Baptists or something like that, considering our differences, but I think they really need to hear the things we have to say.
Yeah, surprisingly well. I was asked to, the Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary had me on their podcast, which I found hilarious, but I went, and that was fun. I'll tell a story. I hope it's okay to tell this story. I don't know if you've heard of a little podcast called The Rise and Fall of Mars Hill. After about episode 4, I got a message from Mike Cosper, who's become a friend of mine. And he said, Gretchen, I picked up your book. I'm going through all of these interviews, and it's horrific, and it's horrible, and it's shaking my faith, and your book is getting me through it right now. Hmm. I'm like, what the heck, God? Like, I didn't even know him. Like, it's just like, I didn't even know him, but he had been digging into a lot of Lutheran theology as a way to process this spiritual trauma of church abuse. Which I found interesting. So as cases of church abuse start coming up, I found a lot of people are either reaching for, a lot of them are reaching to the Anglicans because they are much bigger, but a lot of them are reaching towards more Lutheran doctrines. Again, because the sacraments are something that is outside of just the pastor telling you what to do, and they're trying to reach God through a lot of their hurt and figure out where that is, and the sacraments have become a resting place for them in that. And so it's, yeah, I at the same time I don't want to talk down to my Baptist friends. And I don't want to come across arrogant to them, but let them know that this is something that's for them too, and it's a grace for them instead of a, well, I've been right all along, get with the program, which is tempting but bad. So tempting but bad.
I do think it is interesting how often we are surprised when other denominations appreciate our doctrine. Now, you said it right at the way, like, we're so used to being defensive about Lutheran doctrine that it's kind of refreshing that others are like, oh, wow, this is really good stuff.
Well, and then it's refreshing for us, like, it is. It is pretty good stuff. And so...
But this is legit after all. You know? Yeah. I felt that same way about vocation, you know? Yeah, I mean, you've just seen the explosion of... Yeah. The doctrine of vocation being spelled out in all these different denominations, and I'm kind of, certainly it's a biblical doctrine, but Luther was instrumental in making that doctrine accessible to the people, and that one changed my life. It's fun to see that though, when others kind of grab onto those things.
All right, very good. Any other question? Oh yes, over here.
Hi. I think in a lot of ways vocation is, I think Pastor Goodham has mentioned that it's kind of the word of the day for Lutherans. But I want to bring up a word that we all in the room might be allergic to, and that's ambition. Mm-hmm. Is there ever a healthy ambition? And kind of right off the top of the head, I think where we get the aversion to it is, well, if it's us-centered, yeah, obviously it's a terrible thing, but is there a right way of understanding achievement, goals, pushing towards something?
Yeah, I think kind of what I'd alluded to before is that I think success is a really good thing. It's just going to usually look different than what we think it will look like. Jesus did say, go and make disciples of all nations. He did give us something to do and something to give. And so that ambition, when it is others focused, I think is where it's at. Not just for others, but I think that's a safer and healthier way for us in our own hearts. It's a healthier ambition for our own hearts. I think part of it could just be cultural for us that, you know, I've joked before that Lutherans and Viking fans go hand in hand, you know, because when we win, we probably shouldn't have. And when
accidental, you know, utterly accidental.
So, and when we lose, you know, we got what we deserved, you know, it's just getting away from that cultural mindset is really hard for us. And so, I agree with you. I think that there's a healthy ambition towards it. We just have to give ourselves permission to have that right focus of where it's going for.
And I wonder how much of it, like, we just don't talk a lot about spiritual gifts. That God has gifted us for service in the body of Christ, and we more or less treat that too as accidental. Whereas these are ways that God has equipped us to serve our neighbors, and we should be pursuing that, you know. And an ambition for our neighbor is probably a healthy ambition. An ambition for glory or prestige or position probably going to get us into trouble eventually.
I think, Gretchen, too, you shared this in your talk. You said, you know, you had all these ambitions, you had these goals, mm-hmm. right? And God shifted those along the way. Mm-hmm. I think the key is to be responsive to those shifts. Mm-hmm. But God, all along, the theme has been, and I wrote this down, Jason got to share his, but, you know, love your neighbor well mm-hmm. and give them Jesus. Mm-hmm. You know, as that is your mission, that's your ambition. And you had ideas where you thought that might go, and God used you in a different way, mm-hmm. too. And I think that's you know, very clear in your testimony, for sure.
All right, very good. Yes, another question.
If we have an author in our life that we want to encourage or love or support, do you have advice on things that we could do to show that, or examples from your life of other people who came alongside you and encouraged you or loved on you in your journey?
I have some people, I mean, a lot of them in this room who've just been like, I've used your resources in my church. You know, this is probably self-serving to say Amazon reviews makes every author happy. That's our Valentine's Day card right there. I think for every bad thing people say, I think you could get 100 nice things people say, and then one person says one thing, and that's the one thing that gets stuck in your head. And so I think that encouragement is always helpful. I think, but more so, I don't know, at the same time, there's a lot, because of my issues, there's a lot of accolades that I just don't even want to hear, because I know how dangerous they are for me. And so I hide away from that. And so I would probably say, again, that other focus of, instead of encouraging that author, giving their book to someone else, is probably the nicest thing. Yeah.
Very good. Any other questions? Who's this guy?
Yeah. Random guy in the front.
Now, I just had a question. It may be a little abstract, but just personally, what terms do you think of the vast amount of authors that are putting out more law-based content? Like, how do you think of them? Do you think of them as a mission field? Do you think of them as sort of like a spiritual warfare, a thing to pray against? Like, how do you process that?
That's a really good question. There are friends of mine in the publishing world who I would not recommend their books, but they're my friends, and that's an awkward place to be. I think in my mind, I don't view them as much as the mission field, like they're spiritually dead. I kind of view them more as the hospital ward, where they're really tired and they need some encouragement and they need some gospel infusions. And so I see myself more as they're wanting to be a resting place for them, because they often don't have a resting place in their church or in the areas where they're at. I think of my podcast co-host who was relaying to me a conversation she had with another author who had just hit rock bottom with a lot of theology crashing down on her. And to just be there and give her Jesus instead of pointing out all the ways that she was wrong. I think in some ways the Holy Spirit does what he does, and we don't always have to get involved in that, but to just be that resting place for them, be that hospital room where you just, and then they say that, they're like, oh, I was like hanging out with Gretchen because I always know that I'm gonna, you know, get the gospel from her. I think it's one of those things where, you know, when you're talking to kids, like, okay, they're gonna get it eventually, but so, and to be perfectly honest, and this is maybe something that Lutherans have to say too, and maybe this is just shooting the breeze, we're probably gonna get to heaven and find out we were probably wrong about some things too. Who knows? So keeping that humility. Yeah.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Yes.
Probably last one.
Yeah, last question here.
Yep. Who have you been reading lately, or what are some author recommendations that you have that's been inspiring for you or good for you lately?
I am trying really hard to get through the Brothers Karamazov right now. Really, really hard. Russian literature and Russian, I don't go well together. I read Anna Karenina when I was going through insomnia during pregnancy. She got me through 4 pregnancies. And I'm trying to get through that right now. The book that I'm writing on patience, I've been doing a lot of research. It has put me down a lot of the rabbit trail of Augustine and the doctrine of the Trinity, reading a lot on that from really great stuff being put out right now on some Trinitarian things. And so that was a big rabbit hole I went down for a long time and kind of got stuck down there because it's like the Grand Canyon and you just keep staring at it. And yeah.
All right, very good. Well, thank you, Gretchen. Can we say thank you to Gretchen here again?
Thank you for joining us. Please look us up on the web at beinglutheran.com. Also, invite a friend to check us out on Spotify and iTunes. If you would like more information about the Free Lutheran Bible College and Seminary, please go to flbc.edu. God bless you and have a great week.